This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon is away. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
We don't live in a world, whether it is electricity or communications or all emergency service stuff or financial markets, where anybody stands alone. We are a very interconnected world, and most times that's of great benefit. Every once in a while, it does not work the way it should. And then what you do is make sure that on Monday morning you figure out why and you keep it from happening the next time.
New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg speaking at a press conference Friday after a massive power failure left millions of people without electricity and in some cases without water across the Northeast and in Canada. Dan Shore is also away this week. Susan Page is the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and she joins us here in the studio. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, Linda.
So where were you when the lights went out?
You know, Thursday night reminded me of the last big unexpected catastrophe we had, which was September 11th. On that occasion, I was on the 8:30 shuttle to New York. The pilot came on and said a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. I immediately thought, oh, what a terrible accident. This time, I was in my office. The TV said the lights had gone out in New York, and I thought, oh, I hope it's not terrorism. You know, it's really changed our assumptions about what's causing some unexpected catastrophe like this one. You saw a lot of effects of September 11th, I thought, in the aftermath, in the orderly way people got out of buildings, and in kind of the spirit, especially New Yorkers had as they went about their business. I love the interview you did with that bakery owner in the Bronx earlier in the show, where he talked about how, as a result of the way the community came together in 9/11, there was more watching out for one another's stores. But, you know, what I thought after we knew it wasn't terrorism with the power grid, I thought, isn't that shocking that it's not terrorism, that there can be some glitch, we still don't understand exactly what, that could make the lights go out for 50 million people?
Experts have been talking about the fragility of the system for some time now. This week, President Bush said that he viewed this as a wake-up call, that the infrastructure, the delivery system is old and antiquated, and he says it needs to be fixed. What would it take to fix the system?
Well, it would take a lot of money. One expert says $56 billion. And it would take some federal action. You know, one of the things that has stalled the big energy bill for more than 2 years in Congress are regional and state differences over who should pay higher electricity rates. So it's going to take some action that the federal government hasn't been able to kind of summon before. Now, Congress, when it comes back, will have an energy bill on its plate. The House and Senate have passed conflicting versions of one. One assumes there's going to be a little more impetus to actually getting something done now.
But it also will require the president to do something he hasn't done, which is a big public works project, which would involve spending a lot of money. And it would involve the president who wants small government to act as the overarching big federal government.
That's right. And those will be tough things to do. There are some legitimate policy differences that have stalled action on building new building new power plants or adding to the transmission system. There are also just some partisan differences. And you saw a lot of that yesterday. You saw Democratic presidential candidates criticizing Bush. You saw Republicans trying to turn it around, criticizing Democrats and environmentalists for stalling action on energy. So while we hope this is an impetus to taking action, I guess there's really no guarantee that Washington will respond.
I guess the power outages in California a couple of years ago were not enough of a wake-up call.
Yeah, I think that was mostly a wake-up call to Governor Gray Davis.
And California, the spotlight is on Arnold Schwarzenegger and a pack of candidates for governor if Governor Gray Davis is recalled. There are some new faces coming into the campaign this week.
That's right. Schwarzenegger signed up some big-name advisors, the former Treasury Secretary and Secretary of State George Shultz, the gazillionaire Warren Buffett. That gave him some credibility on financial issues. But it sort of underscored one of the risks for Arnold Schwarzenegger now. You know, for instance, Buffett says that California property taxes are too low. Politically, that's kind of a difficult position. Does Schwarzenegger agree with him? You know, if you're an actor in Hollywood, you do not have to take a position on the level of property taxes. But if you're running for governor of California, you're really required to do that. He's been a candidate now for about 2 weeks. He still remains something of a mystery. He didn't do interviews this week. He didn't have a press conference. He did film some campaign commercials, though.
But we still don't really know what Arnold Schwarzenegger stands for. I mean, I saw him described in the paper today as a liberal Republican.
A liberal Republican,
maybe,
right?
True.
Possibly. Who knows? the election's on October 7th. Presumably before then, he will be forced to answer some questions about exactly what he would do about the really serious problems that California faces.
The White House has not expressed an opinion on the California recall effort. Would an Arnold Schwarzenegger win affect Mr. Bush in 2004, do you think?
Well, it could, but it's hard to calculate exactly why, and that's one reason President Bush, who was in California for 2 days this week, did everything he could to avoid answering questions about the gubernatorial race. You know, you assume that if there was a Republican governor of the state, it would help Bush win the state's 54 electoral votes. On the other hand, Schwarzenegger is opposed by some conservative Republicans in the state who don't like the fact that he supports abortion rights, he supports gay rights, he supports some additional gun controls. All that is the reason Bush is trying to keep his distance.
Governor Gray Davis has also picked up a presidential ally, former President Bill Clinton, who obviously knows a thing or two about surviving.
He did. You know, in fact, Democrats draw some parallels between the impeachment of President Clinton, the recall election in California, even the dispute over the end of the 2000 presidential election, as cases in which Republicans, if they don't like the results that you got at the ballot box, they try to undo them afterwards. So Clinton has been, interestingly, a kind of behind-the-scenes advisor for Gray Davis, and he is a smart guy who knows a lot about politics. But Democrats in the state are really divided. Do they get behind Gray Davis and try to beat the recall? Or to get behind the lieutenant governor, Cruz Bustamante, and try to get him to win election on the second question on that ballot?
Let's turn to Liberia. 200 Marines are in Liberia now. President Charles Taylor is out. Does his absence make the to-do list for lasting peace in Liberia somewhat more manageable?
I think it helps. He's been a really brutal figure. He started a civil war in 1989. He ordered the previous dictator tortured to death. He said he'd go back to war if he didn't win the election in 1997, an interesting approach for a politician to take. His departure makes things easier. It makes it possible for U.S. troops to go in. President Bush had made that a condition of U.S. troops moving in. Some aid, food and medicine, is now moving in. But Taylor's departure does not address the terrible poverty there. It doesn't heal divisions from the long civil war. It doesn't in itself end the general state of chaos. All that will take a long time.
Mr. Taylor has been indicted for war crimes in Sierra Leone. However, he will take exile in Nigeria for now. What kind of influence do you suppose he could wield over Liberia from Nigeria?
Well, as he left, there was a sort of chilling comment he made. He said, "God willing, I will return." I think most people in Liberia hope that doesn't turn out to be the case. And the fact is, we have some experience with despots who manage to negotiate their exile. They avoid prosecution for war crimes. Sometimes they take millions of dollars with them to live in exile. They almost never return. You know, we had a great example of that this morning with the news that Idi Amin had died in Saudi Arabia. You know, he had been a very brutal dictator in Uganda, 8 years, a reign of terror. He fled in 1979. He went to various places, Libya, Iraq, ended up in Saudi Arabia. He was not able to return to Uganda. And I think most people think it's unlikely that Charles Taylor is going to be a figure in the political future in Liberia.
Susan Page? Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Linda.
Susan Page is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today.